The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What does his text mean?
So frustrating.
Maybe he's just not that into me.
I don't know if she really likes
I've
me.
Always been bad
How
at flirting.
How can I get her attention?
I'm ready for marriage.
I just want somebody to share my life.
Is this relationship?
Is this relationship going anywhere?
Modern love made simple. This is Dates and Mates with Damona Hoffman.
Hello, lovers. I hope you're all staying healthy and safe. But I'm hearing far too many stories about people still dating in person right now. Please do us all a favor and just stay home. There are still so many ways to connect. And I believe that in the end, this period will actually improve our connections and be better for dating overall. But in the meantime, we all have to do our part. If you're still feeling that drive for connection, that desire to have matches pop up in your inbox, don't worry, I've got you covered. I just released an exclusive training just for my Patreon friends with benefits all about social distance dating. It covers where the singles are right now, how to have a successful virtual date, how to know if a match is really right for you, and so much more. And that's all waiting for you right now if you join our Patreon community at patreon.com/datesandmates. The link will be included in the show notes, and it's only $5 to join. I'd love to have you be a part of the community. I'd love for you to keep dating and learning new dating skills, working on your mindset, working on your dating strategy, and I'm here to support you all the way through this pandemic. And I know your dating life may be stalled at the moment. But as they say, the show must go on. We are not stopping. I've already told y'all I intend on making more episodes for another 7 seasons, so you can still count on me every Monday for your Dates and Mates fix. Today, we are talking all about brain chemistry and romance. You remember those "This Is Your Brain on Drugs" commercials from the 90s? They're all like, your brain will turn to mush and you won't be able to make good decisions and your emotions will be all over the place. Yeah, that's basically your brain on love too, because love is a drug. But don't fret. We are going to be talking with Noelle Cordeau. She's the co-host of the Everything Life Coaching podcast, and she's here to help us prevent our brains from turning to emotional mush. But first, I will be discussing this week's headlines. Producer Leo is working remotely today, but she is still churning out the Dates and Mates, and we are sending her much love. We are going to be talking about where the affairs are happening during the quarantine, and we have a big reveal of Ariana Grande's new boo, plus new ideas for your quarantine dates if you're tired of watching Tiger King and just going to bed. Oh, wait. Maybe that's just me. Then Noelle and I will cover your questions, including what do you do when you get stood up and how to tell if someone is just letting you down easy. That is on the docket for today's Dates and Mates. I am going to hit these headlines.
D's Dating Dish.
If you're looking for an affair, I know just where to go. Seeking Arrangement. Seeking.com reported that they had a 74% increase over this time last year in new members. Whew, here's what this tells me. This quarantine can make or break it for your relationship if you are already seeing someone right now. But here's the thing. It's like these fantasy affairs that actually aren't going to be consummated for a long time that are sparking up because people are in this pressure cooker. You're with your partner all day, every day. All of the challenges that you had that you used to be able to escape are now staring you in the face every morning and noon and night. And so people are turning to apps and sites like Seeking and Ashley Madison because they're trying to escape. They're trying to avoid looking at what these relationship challenges really are. And they're just looking for an outlet to be able to chat and make a connection with someone else, have someone else tell them that they're beautiful, that they are proud of them for what they're doing, that they are happy that they're hanging in there through this challenging time. We're all just looking for a little more love and support. But what I would say is, rather than turning to an outside person, could we use this moment to look inward at our relationship and see what could be fixed during this time, what you could talk through, and remember not to react to what's being said, but to really take time to listen and respond thoughtfully and look for solutions. We are going to be in this, unfortunately, for a long time. And hopefully, if you made a commitment to your relationship, you're going to be in that for a long time too. And we can't keep brushing the problems under the rug. Drag them out right now and let's talk about it in a compassionate way and really look for solutions to these problems so that you can move forward stronger together in the future. One person that is a lot stronger than she was in her previous relationship is Ariana Grande. You may remember that she connected with this rando in a bar. She was photographed smooching some guy up and nobody knew who he was. Well, it's been revealed. It's a fella named Dalton Gomez. He's a high-end real estate agent. Actually looks a little bit like Pete Davidson, who I was alluding to earlier, her big breakup from before. And she's been showing him on social the last few days. But here's the interesting thing about it. For a lot of you who may have started dating someone right before the quarantine, they've decided to quarantine together. And this really adds a big challenge for a new relationship. And she does have a history, as you all know, of jumping into relationships very quickly. I think she and Pete were engaged within 3 or 4 weeks of dating one another. So she's done it again. She's jumped right into the arms of the next guy waiting for her. And look, she's a catch. She's a great girl. She loves to take care of somebody. And she's ended up being the caretaker in a lot of these relationships she's had in the past. But I just want to warn any of you who may be in a similar situation and facing a dating pattern. If you see yourself on the track for a relationship repeat, doing the same thing that didn't work in your last relationship, let's put on the brakes, back it up a little bit. This is a time to really slow down and evaluate. And if you are quarantining with somebody that you barely know right now, you have to really ask yourself, is this what I want for my future? If, let's say, one of us gets it, do I want to be sitting here sick with this person? Is this person going to be there for me if I need the support down the road? You may not know. I don't know. Maybe Dalton Gomez will be that for Ariana Grande. But let's just take a beat and look at our relationship history and decide if we want our relationship past to also be our relationship future. If you're looking for a quarantine date, Men's Health to the Rescue. I will put the link to this in the show notes. I got to tell you, there were some pretty racy suggestions here, but there were also some very cute ideas, like building a pillow fort if you don't have private outdoor access. I don't know about you, but I remember as a kid, building a pillow fort was one of the most exciting things that I did. And you could do it inside the house. You don't have to go out. And it adds just this level of playfulness and feeling of nostalgia, which is something you've probably heard me say on the show before that really can bond you to someone. So I thought that was a super cute idea from Men's Health. If you want to get a little risque, this isn't even like close to one of the more risque ideas, but they suggested playing strip Scrabble. My husband and I, during our our 13th wedding anniversary? I'm embarrassed. I don't remember which anniversary. Maybe it was our 12th. Last year, we went to a hotel that had this cool little lounge with games in it. And we played the most fun game of Scrabble ever over drinks. never occurred to me to play strip Scrabble. So maybe you could get a little creative. You could have a karaoke night. There's a lot of apps that can connect you. And there's a link to one in the Men's Health article. You could play a game of Never Have I Ever. I also, if you followed the last TV series that I did, A Question of Love, that was based on the 36 questions that lead to love that was in the New York Times, and how asking these intimate questions can really bond you to your partner. If it bonded strangers, just imagine what it could do for someone that you're already in a relationship with. But hey, maybe that is something you could try out if you're doing virtual quarantine dates as well. There's so many ideas out there. There's so many ways that we can be creative and innovate during this time. I just ask that you please stay home. Let's flatten the curve, but let's pique our interest in our current relationship, or possibly in a new relationship. And in just a moment, we will have Noelle Cordo, who's the co-host of the Everything Life Coaching podcast and the co-founder of Journey Coaching, talking about your brain on drugs, the drug of love. I cannot wait.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're here with Noelle Cordo. She is the CEO of Journey, and that's spelled J-R-N-I. They are a coaching platform that trains coaches. And she's also the co-host of the Everything Life Coaching podcast. You may remember her co-host from that show from a previous episode, John Kim, the angry therapist. Great episode. Check that out. But first, today we have to talk, because Noelle is going to be giving us the basic romantics guide to the brain and some perspective on how your brain and your biology actually affects romance. I am so pumped for today's episode. You guys know I'm all about this brain chemistry and nerding out on love. So luckily today I don't have to do it alone. Please give big smooches to Noelle Cordo.
Thank you so much for having me. And honestly, I don't like doing it alone either. So this is a wonderful day.
I am really pumped because so many of my listeners feel like they're kind of on this journey, not to use it, to use your own term, this journey of love, and feeling like they don't have any control over it. They don't really understand what's happening in their body. They don't understand dating apps. They don't understand how they're reacting to people on dates. And they're just kind of going through the motions, like there has to be a better way. And I find that the way to solve most problems, I'm sure as a coach, you would agree with this, is to first figure out what the heck is going on.
100%. 100%. I say to my students at Journey Coaching and to my clients, it's not you, it's your brain.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
Yeah.
My chemical romance. There are three human brain chemicals that come into play at each stage of romance. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, I sure can. And, some of these chemicals team up with each other. So there's a lot of complex processes. But I think the most important piece of information that I can drop is the bomb that when you experience romantic love, it's actually not an emotion. It is a hardwired motivation system that's evolutionary, and it's been built up over the history of humankind to enable humans to find and maintain intimate relationships with a preferred partner.
Oh, wait, that's deep. We have to back that up for a second,
because
there's a lot in there. You said love is not an emotion. We are basically biologically wired for it. So explain how that plays out then in today's world of dating.
Yeah. So, the feeling, the chemical feelings of romance are not the only motivational system that we have hardwired in our body. So another really common one is our negativity bias that's associated with a fight or flight response. So the way that that works is because our ancestors used to have to physically outrun danger, we are naturally attuned to that which is negative. It really doesn't help us out in modern life. Same deal with romantic love. Obviously, everyone loves love. We see it reflected in movies and poetry and music and all of the things that humans produce. So it's clearly a huge and vital part of our existence. And the purpose of it is procreation of the species. So whenever we're feeling these feelings, you kind of have to step back and say, okay, there's something deeper going on here. There are unconscious drives. There are chemicals, neurotransmitters that are coursing through our body that are kind of hijacking our capacity to choose for ourselves how we respond and react in situations where romantic love is on the table.
That sounds complicated, Noelle.
It is complicated.
Just in all seriousness, you know, I've said before on the show that I don't believe in love at first sight. I believe in lust at first sight, but I think I believe in slow love, and that love, true love, develops over time. What's your reaction to that?
You're pretty spot on with the way the chemicals work.
Guys, I didn't pay her to say that or anything. But, you know, I'm saying it from a experiential point of view of watching how my clients have developed relationships over the last 15 years that I've been doing this. Tell me from like the more brain chemistry perspective, what's really going on in that?
Yeah. So when you fall in romantic love with someone, for men, it tends to be visually based. For women, it tends to be emotionally based. And that's not as terrible as it sounds. You know, from an evolutionary perspective, symmetry is what typically tipped off our species that somebody was healthy. So symmetry is attractive for people, and men are more susceptible to focusing on symmetry than women. Women are looking for stability from a partner. That's where the emotional piece comes in. And again, this isn't based in, you know, kind of hearsay. These are long-held evolutionary traits. So the deep cut is that we evolved from bonobos in this particular regard. We have a 90% DNA match with bonobos, which are chimpanzees. And these guys used to live in treetops. And when they lived in treetops, they were a non-monogamous species. When they fell out of the trees and began living on the ground, the women, or female bonobos, needed men to take care of them, or males to take care of them, and then they began serial monogamy. And then humans evolved from that.
Gives a whole different tone to the term swinging, I
guess. Oh, yeah. 100%.
But I know a lot of, okay, sorry for the corny jokes, but I know a lot of people listening are thinking, that was evolution, right? But we're modern. We don't have to be, we don't have to be married to this old model of how relationships were formed.
Absolutely.
What do you say to that?
We do not have to be, we can choose. We absolutely have determination, but what we don't have control over is our brain chemistry. So when there are two types of romantic love, reciprocated and unrequited, and they're very different beasts. And so, you know, everybody listening, think about what it feels like to fall in love. That means that you have focused attention on that person, that there's magnification, you have pink lenses, there's intrusive thinking, you can't get that person out of your head, you feel exhilaration, torrents of emotion, yearning for them, looking for clues. How many times have you guys seen people like listening to songs, looking for clues about the person they're interested in? And all of those behavioral markers are actually driven by neurotransmitters that start showing up when our brain gets tipped off that, hey, I might have a mating partner.
Okay, so you're telling me basically we are working against our own biology. Like when we say, well, I don't necessarily, I don't want a partnership, or I'm not into monogamy. Is that what you're saying, or am I hearing this wrong?
Well, yeah. So when we're talking about kind of working against ourselves, we have to understand where these drives are coming from. And there's two different kinds of mating drives. And so we're using like really technical language here to describe what happens in us, not as necessarily humans, but as an animal species, right? So we all have hardwired in us lust, which is the craving for sexual gratification. And that evolved in humans where we're looking to seek sexual union with a semi-appropriate partner. So that when I say semi-appropriate partner, that's a genetic match. And that's actually driven by a sense of smell in humans, interestingly enough. And then the second piece is attachment. And so that evolved in humans to enable our ancestors to live with a mate long enough to rear a child. And those feelings pair with a long-term partner are a really specific part of your brain that grows with courtship rituals and intellectual conversation and emotional bonding.
So let's talk about that, because I mentioned slow love, but I think some of our listeners that are newer to this concept don't really get what I mean.
How
does that happen? And like, how, what is actually happening in our brains as you're getting to know someone slowly over time? And I'll just add one thing. I also recommend that my clients space out their interactions, because when it all happens, when you're in that initial phase and you're seeing each other like every day for the first week, you think that you're very bonded and you're having this flood of brain chemicals, I imagine. And then you get further down the road and the feeling changes. What's going on in that evolution?
Yeah. So I'm going to validate you again. Your advice is actually spot on. I'm two for two with your brain chemicals. So spacing out communication gives you a fighting chance to disrupt the mayhem that takes place in your brain. So when you first fall in love, or when you have that surge of chemicals with romantic love, that period of time with those bonkers chemicals will last 12 to 18 months. So we have to understand that, first of all, the first 12 to 18 months are not going to be an authentic representation of what you can expect from this person as a partner. So really early on, what happens is dopamine spikes. And the other chemical we really want to pay attention to here is serotonin, which lowers. So how those two components relate to each other is dopamine is so very, very addictive. So a text message from that person, contact, communication, they liked your Instagram post, that all gives you this motivation set that you keep wanting more. You keep reaching for this romantic drug that you're being fed. On the other hand, serotonin, which is a regulator, lowers when you're in that crazy beginning phase. So that serotonin regulator increases your sense of risk-taking behaviors. That's how people can get very swept away in the early stages of romantic love. Serotonin produces a sense of calm and mood stabilization. So when that gets hijacked, everything kind of goes out the window in terms of actual sense.
So we turn crazy is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically. We sure do.
We turn crazy. Our inhibition lowers. We're like high, basically high on dopamine. We're pretty messed up in that first phase.
Very much so. Very much so.
And that's for a relatively long time. You said 12 to 18 months?
12 to 18 months.
So this is why we hear, well, I thought I knew him and then I married him and this is not the man that I married. You're saying it's really not the man that
yes.
you married, or it's you're not really the same.
Exactly. Both.
Both.
All of the above. And if you happen to be on SSRIs, which are a form of antidepressants, or birth control, the birth control messes up your sense of smell. And a lot of times when you go off of those kinds of medications, you're no longer attracted to your partner because your turn-on template was compromised when you first got together.
Okay, so what do we do, Noel? Like, do we just take the IUD, or do we take his shirt home and smell it and sleep with it? Like, how can we retrain our brain so that we can be wired correctly for romance?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that awareness is the key to everything. So having a pretty clear understanding of the way your brain works, what the brain chemicals are, how they exist, what you're experiencing in the moment is really valuable information. So let's talk about testosterone. When you are single, your testosterone is higher. So you know how people say, oh my God, I got into a relationship and I put on weight? That's because your testosterone lowered and you didn't feel like working out. And you were putting on less muscle and you weren't as interested in attracting a partner. And then when you break up, your testosterone goes right back up again. And that gets us into fighting form to find our partner.
Wait, that's for men and women.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that's different than what a lot of people hear. We hear testosterone just being associated with men, really. But for women, it's also an important driver in relationships.
Very much so. Very much so. So testosterone has a lot to do with your sex drive. And both single males and females have higher levels of testosterone. And if you separate or divorce or break up, your testosterone rises.
This is just blowing my mind.
Good.
This is blowing my mind. And I know it's going to blow the mind of a lot of our listeners. What about for those who really want to fall in love? Like, we have all the information. Yeah. We know that our brain is basically working against us or working in concert with biological factors that we cannot control.
Yeah.
How can we still fall in love in today's world? Is it possible?
Yes, it is certainly possible. And, you know, we can work with our motivation system to induce scenarios when we actually fall in love. So I'll give you the 1-2 punch. Let's talk about the scenarios in which we're most likely to fall in love. And then once we are in a relationship that we are kind of looking around and saying, wow, this is a really good thing. Let's talk about the parts of the brain and what we need to do to keep everything going. So you're most likely to fall in love when you meet someone during a life crisis. So don't, you know, try to bring on a life crisis, but if you happen to be in crisis, start looking around. It's a really good move.
This is pretty different. This is a different approach, because a lot of times you hear that people, like, you shouldn't meet someone in the middle of a crisis because everything in your life is a blur. Like, let's define crisis for people. Like,
yeah,
divorce or...
Well, yeah, actually. Yes. So times of stress make you more likely to fall in love. Novelty. If you meet someone when you're moving, when everything is brand new, if you're having a hard time at work, if you're suddenly meeting a whole bunch of strangers, anything that is different or stressful makes you more likely to fall in love. When you're faced with mystery, novelty, quasi-dangerous situations.
This is why I say, Noel, that you want to do something on a date that has action and activity to it, mm-hmm. rather than just, oh my gosh, if I hear of another boring dinner date. But if you do something where there's like competition or you're, you know, go-kart racing and there's adrenaline, that's a better first date, right?
It is, and it's all to do with those dopamine levels. You're kicking them into high gear.
And probably also, I'm just musing here for a second, we hear people meeting at the gym. Does the testosterone level there have something to do with that?
Likely.
And we can smell people. I mean, we can smell
people. And you can smell people. And that, you know, you cannot underestimate the role of smell. Women are attracted to men whose sweat smells good to them. And that signals that you're a good genetic match.
I'm going to say something really creepy.
Okay, do it.
I actually smell my husband like a hound, like a bloodhound. Yeah, go up to him and I'll be like, I just want to smell you. And he's like, this is so weird. But it's not weird. I can tell him now. This is not weird. Does it change, though, like the way that we smell them as, like, we've been together 16 years. Do people's smells change in the way that you are attracted to certain smells change over time?
No, the chemical foundation will remain the same. What changes is the way that you experience pair bonding. So in the beginning, lust is the main driver. And then as you go deeper into the relationship, that's when attachment and emotion takes over.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more.
Yeah. So emotional attachment is one of the things that keeps couples together. And it goes through 4-year chapters. So as we're thinking about this, there is a really specific part of your brain that we want to be concerned with. And it's the caudate insular part of your brain. And this part of your brain lights up the deeper the verbal, mental, emotional connection. So when you press on that part of your brain, it expands your capacity for pair bonding. So it expands the capacity of the couple to stay together if they are mutually engaging with each other and pressing on that intellectual, emotional void that needs to be filled. And another thing to understand about this part of your brain is there's another time when it lights up. And it also lights up with cocaine and opioid withdrawal.
Oh, my gosh. I thought you were going to say, like, in childbirth when you have a kid.
No.
And you're like, when you're strung out on drugs.
Yeah. So
close.
If you're going
similar.
Through a breakup and you feel like you're dying, that's why.
So you're basically having, like, an opioid withdrawal.
Correct. From the psychological, emotional part of your brain that you need.
So wait, how can we get over this though? Like, like there's no, what is that? I don't remember the name of that drug you take, like when you're,
detox. The beta blockers? No.
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't go to the hospital and be like, help me, I'm having a relationship withdrawal. Like, give me a shot.
Yeah.
So how can we do this with the tools that we have that are legally and responsibly available?
Yeah. So, I mean, first, let's talk about maintaining your relationships. So, you know, similar to when you first start dating, the role of dopamine is really important. So doing novel and exciting things together. Increased adrenaline equals increased dopamine. Prolonged eye gazing is something that really works to get those brain chemicals rolling and to keep everybody pair bonded. Increased dopamine also gives you more feelings of attraction towards each other. So the more dopamine that you can direct towards each other, the more you're going to feel attracted to each other. Touch also amplifies and exponentially impacts pair bonding. So the more actual touching that a couple engages in, the more likely they are to stay together. And that really specifically triggers the endorphin of oxytocin, which gives you that feeling of attachment. And also working out, increased testosterone equals increased romance. So staying mentally and physically stimulated is really what we're talking about. So, and the intellectual piece can't be discounted here because that's your prefrontal cortex, the logic center of your brain, your reasoning. And so we need to keep that piece really super alive.
That's a lot to do, but I think we could start somewhere. We can start small. And just understanding, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, just first understanding what factors are at work is the beginning of that process. But I know through Journey, you not only coach people and help people understand all of these factors and create a plan to move forward, but you also are training other coaches to be able to spread this message. Tell me a little bit about Journey and why you had this mission to start this company.
Oh, sure. So, you know, Journey Coaching is a coaching collective. We have coaches from all over the world who have come through our training program to learn things similar to what we're talking about today. It all starts with the brain. It all starts with, you know, how did we get here? What's our evolutionary cycles? Let's understand what makes us up. It's not you, it's your brain. We look at the difference between feelings and facts, and we train coaches based on graduate level evidence-based work. The reason that we started our company is because when John and I, my business partner, both started out 10 years ago, it was really hard to gain traction as a coach. And so we created the company and the community that we wish we had.
That is wonderful. And I encourage anyone who is listening that thinks they might want to help other people in this way to check out Journey and see how they can begin this process, because we need more warriors of love and of truth and of authenticity and all of the wonderful things that I know you teach in this program. Before we go, Noelle, we have questions that have been submitted to us from our listeners. So I would love for you to stick around and answer a few of those.
Absolutely.
Welcome back to Dates and Mates. We are here doing your favorite segment and mine, Technically Dating.
Technically Dating.
All right, Noelle Cordo, you are in the hot seat because we have questions that have been submitted from our listeners. This one comes to us from someone that says, "My date forgot about a date that we scheduled 24 hours ago. Last night, we set a time, place, and everything and planned to get drinks after he got off work. Basically, I waited at the place for 30 minutes, sent him a text to which he replied, question mark. I got stood up, and he's so apologetic about it, but is this a red flag? He texted me, sorry, I'm a total dick, and I deserve to never be talked to again, but no explanation, Noelle, or attempt to salvage. Is this a red flag?" People always ask me, is this a red flag?
Yes.
Red flag, yes.
Yes. You know, and really, you know, when we're dating, one of the things that I always say to my coaches and my clients is, you know, it's not about whether a certain behavior is good or bad. It's what's acceptable for your life. If it is fundamentally unacceptable for you to have someone not remember plans and to not give you an explanation, well, then this person's behavior isn't going to be a good fit.
Yeah. I'm all for like giving people the benefit of the doubt. Like if they're, look, I have goofed. I'm pretty good with appointments, but I have definitely goofed a couple of times and profusely apologized and said, please, like, how can I make it up to you? But it sounds like from his response to her, sorry, I'm a total dick and I deserve to never be talked to again. He's not really making efforts to repair the relationship.
No, and it's kind of a pass off. He's abdicating responsibility. And instead of, you know, owning it, he's linguistically forcing the choice for the other person to make the call. Yes, you deserve to or not be talked to again.
Right. And I would bet, just based on this language, this is not the first time this has happened to him.
No.
But then the question is, the question is, what can she do to avoid this happening again? Because I found like my clients really don't get stood up or ghosted very often or at all. I can think of one in the last year. But do you have a system that you would tell your clients to make sure that people are showing up for them and that they're like honoring their time so that other people will honor it too?
I mean, being very straightforward with what your ask is, you know, or what your expectations are at the beginning, that if communication is important, if promptness is important, if showing up is important, then let somebody know right up front, hey, this is important to me and I'd like to see you. And so if you'd like to see me, you need to show up and communicate.
Absolutely. And I was so, when I was single, this was such a deal breaker for me. Like if someone canceled a date, that was just it. And I want to make sure that, like, even though I said I'm all for giving people the benefit of the doubt, that it's clear that I'm saying people, you teach people how to treat you. And I can think of so many instances where I was like really excited to go out with someone, but if they showed me who they were, I believe them right away. And I just was like, nope, we're not going to do this. And if she gives him the benefit of the doubt, she's probably going to end up with him not showing up for her down the road based on this response.
Or not showing up in different ways.
Yeah, you got me. Yep, exactly that, Noelle. Okay, one more question before you leave us for the day. This one comes to us from a fella who says, I'm seeing a woman who told me she doesn't want to go deeper because she doesn't want to risk losing our friendship. Should I keep trying, or is this a way, a soft way to let me down?
I have so many questions.
Based on the information that we have, he's been friend zoned, that's for sure. But is it salvageable? Should he move on? What do you think?
So when he says, I have been seeing a woman, what does that mean? You know, are we talking about—
He's been like seeing her face.
He's been seeing her face. Okay. Yeah.
I think it's this casual, like this epidemic of just hangout dates or just like this not knowing, you know, it's people just not being in a specific dating situation, but we're just hanging out.
Yeah. Okay. So this sounds like a boundary has been set, that this woman has said, you know, what we have going on right now is where I want to stay.
Yeah. It could be a friends with benefits situation too.
Yeah. It could be. And, you know, I mean, honesty is always the best policy. Like if it's always worth a shot, you know, to say to somebody, hey, you've told me where your boundary is. I see you, I hear you, and I respect it. And here's what I would like. So I'm going to put it on the table. And here's the threshold that I have for continuing to see you and not having my needs met. So there's going to come a time when this casual thing ends because I want more. And if you want more, let's discuss it.
Okay, now tell me from a chemical brain chemistry perspective, when, first of all, if a woman puts you in the friend zone, can you get out of it? And is it different from the man? And then also, if they are in a friends with benefits situation and they're like, let's say they are having sex, can you still like form a relationship with someone else if you're having sex with a different person?
Okay, we got to take these questions one by
separately.
One. Because the brain chems are all different.
Yes.
So if you are seeing someone and you have been friend zoned, so this is not my opinion. This is like purely from a chemical perspective. So dudes typically won't give up the hunt because they're attracted physically to the symmetry. Women's minds can be changed because of the deepening emotional intimacy and capacity for support and connection.
Mm-hmm. Go on. So if she's friend-zoned him, it's possible that she could change her mind?
It is possible that she could change her mind.
What would he have to do? Yeah, what would he have to do?
He would have to, so we're talking about that part of your brain that lights up with pair bonding. So from an emotional intimacy and intellectual intimacy perspective, press on that part of the brain, because that's actually the more important part, that the emotional connection supersedes the physical connection for women.
Okay, so we're not saying do that, but we're saying if you are friend zoned and you'd like to change it and you want to devote the next 3 to 6 months of your life to trying to do that rather than to pursuing someone else, there you go.
Now,
we have to talk about friends with benefits from a chemical perspective.
Yeah.
Having sex with someone that's easy and available, even if they are not somebody that you want to pair bond with, does that reduce your ability to make another relationship happen?
Yes.
Tell me more.
Okay, so once you get into that zone where you're being intimate with somebody, so remember, romantic love is a motivation system. That motivation system wants to keep kicking and complete itself. It goes through phases. It wants to go through the first 12 to 18 months, and then it wants to go into the next 4-year chapter, and then the 4-year chapter after that, basically looking at procreation as the goal. So I know that everybody listening to me is like, I don't want to have a baby. I'm like, your brain and body don't know that, right? Like, mm-hmm. Your brain and body are trying to override all of your actual desires. So what you're doing is setting yourself up for a world of hurt. On both sides, for you and your partner. And that's not an opinion, that's just the chemical facts. So when stuff starts to not work, or when love is unrequited, or when that emotional piece doesn't deepen, then we get into a whole series of other chemical reactions that scramble your brain.
That sounds painful.
It is. Yeah, it's stage one is protest. And that's where we have frustration, restlessness, obsession, panic, stress. And then stage two is despair and resignation. And that's when we have depression. Women withdraw socially and need to retell their story over and over again. Men get angry and engage in risk-taking behavior. Not my opinion, science.
We can't fight the science, Noelle.
Can't fight it.
Well, thank you for continuing to spread the good word. If anyone listening is interested in exploring this world of coaching, you should check them out at Journey Coaching, and that's spelled JRNICoaching.com, or on the socials at Journey Coaching. Thank you so much for being here, Noelle.
It's been awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed episode 303 of Dates and Mates, and I hope I didn't get too preachy on you about washing your hands and staying at home, but hey, somebody's got to say it. You can connect with me on all of the socials. I'm still answering DMs, and I'm taking questions for future Dates and Mates episodes. I'm at Damona Hoffman on all of the socials. Please connect with me. I love hearing from you guys, and we all could use a little extra community right now. Speaking of community, I'd love to have you as an official part of the Dates and Mates community on Patreon. My friends with benefits get all my best goodies, especially that video training that I just released on how you can still be social distance dating. It's so helpful, so juicy. I'm loving the feedback I'm getting from my current Patreon patrons and friends with benefits. I'd love to have you in the club. Just go to patreon.com/datesandmates. Until next week, I wish you good health and happy dating.